Hey everybody, it's Ross here, and it's the Etch Podcast, if you didn't already know, although you probably should have. So we've got another interview with an awesome person, and we're continuing this thread of destroying the default, which is just a way to say, you know everything that you know? Yeah, think again. And if anything, it comes through this idea that we learn through our teams and our line managers and our leaders, but we haven't considered the digital transformation that we're all undertaking and we need to continue with, because that is where the future of work is. So I grabbed some time with Tim. I also grabbed his book, which is called Lateral Leadership. It's published by Sense and Respond, which is under the principles of Jeff Gofelf and Josh Seiden. And Jeff actually was one of the ones that I picked up first, which was about Lean UX. So it's a great thread. The book itself is a lovely purple number, but it's only 64 pages long. And on the front of the book, it says you can read it within 40 minutes. Why not? You know, you could be missing out on 40 minutes of really awesome inspiration, especially if you're a product manager working within a agile business. So I caught some time with Tim. He is doing a lot of sharing of what he's doing, and I kind of got aware of what he's doing on LinkedIn, where I'm spending a bit more time, but he's always doing talks, he's always sharing some of the learnings that he's taken on, and I had an opportunity to speak with him, and this is the interview. So I'll leave you with that, and I'll join you in on the end, which, you know, follows the interview. Enjoy. Welcome everyone to the Etch Podcast. Today we have a special guest in the form of Tim Herbig. He has written a book on lateral leadership, which is a practical guide for agile product managers. And Tim himself is a builder of products and teams, and I've been really keen to talk to him about the subject of the book. But also, Tim does some really good work on sharing what he knows and the stories that he does in a very accessible fashion. And I think that exposure to some of the stories that he has to share can be quite powerful. So, Tim, welcome to the Etch Podcast. What are you up to at the moment?
So what I'm doing right now, so it's like a two-sided thing. So on the one hand, I currently lead a team which builds an A/B testing platform called Iridion, which is a fully distributed team. I'm like leading the overall team of the product marketing sales efforts. So which is a great like practical day-to-day exercise, I would like to call it, on every level product management requires, whether it's strategic or operational. And on the other hand, as you just mentioned, I love like sharing knowledge and helping others to build better products and teams and not just do it myself. I try to do that through as many channels as possible, or at least reasonable. Maybe I'm beyond reasonable. That's a debate. But like, yeah, so I pursued the book last year, which was an insane project, even though it's kind of a tiny book, but it was a great experience doing that, sharing my thoughts on lateral leadership. I also love to write a lot, share some stuff on either it's LinkedIn or my website. And of course, also appear at conferences and share what I've learned with audiences there. So it's like something like author and speaker.
Yeah, yeah. And this is where I got onto your story and your content, because you're spending, it must be quite an amount of time sharing content on, I found you on LinkedIn, but I know you're on Instagram as well. And it must take a lot of work putting things together. How do you fit that in with building and leading the product that you're doing?
Yeah, I think the super honest answer is that my free time is less fun than for most people, probably, to be super honest. I don't think I have to make anything up. So I'm not a 4:30 a.m. riser and have my shit together. So it's kind of, it's different. But to me, it's like, this doesn't feel like work. It feels like something I so truly care about. And this is why I aim to make it happen, right? And this is why I try to fit it in. And it's like, I don't like this idea of like, are you working again? I was like, yeah. So like technically, yes, but it's like, I don't feel like stressed and I'm not doing it because my boss told me to do so. But like, I have this urge to share. And I think this is where it's come from. And I always, I think for me, the most interesting journey about this is like finding a channel to work on. So I started on writing on the blog. Then I started the newsletter, still have the newsletter, doing blog less regularly. And ever I did Twitter for quite a while, pretty intensively, whatever. And I tingled around with LinkedIn and Instagram for quite a while. And for 2019, I wanted to become more serious about LinkedIn and Instagram, because I think, especially LinkedIn, the mechanisms they have in place are so powerful to accelerate your content to audiences you otherwise would never reach.
And I totally get that. One of the things you just said is something that I kind of believe in, is that even if I wasn't paid to do what I'm doing now, I would still do it.
Yeah.
It's not this work-life balance. Yeah. I choose to do it because I enjoy it. And either we're very strange people, you and I, or it's something that I'm kind of on a theme over the next few weeks and months about destroying the defaults and destroying this default.
Yeah.
That you go to work 9 to 5, you live for the weekend, and you kind of don't enjoy the Monday morning of going to work. Yeah. I don't find myself there, and I don't think you do either. Sharing what you're doing around the work that you're kind of committed to. And I don't think you're sharing it for sharing's sake. I think you actually believe in this.
Yeah. And I think this is the difference between like people who get hired to do content marketing for a bigger corporate, between compared to people building their personal brand, as Gary Vaynerchuk would say. So I think that building the personal brand rather as the side effect, because what's motivating me to do it is not building my personal brand, but more like reaching people and helping them to excel.
Oh, totally. I mean, personal brand doesn't pay very well.
I mean, ask Gary Vaynerchuk about it. For him, it does.
Yeah, but it's a leverage tool.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it helps you get to where you need to go.
Absolutely. And I also think that especially the notion that you have to build a personal brand, even though if you are a full-time employee, is drastically underrated for most people. They think, I'm an employee, I have a contract, I do 9 to 5, I don't need a personal brand. I was like, but what if your company goes to shit? What if the economy goes to shit? Like, what happens then? What do you have?
I don't know who... Oh, Arnold Schwarzenegger, of course, the man. He said, don't work on plan B.
Yeah.
Make plan B part of your plan A, or just do lots of things like personal brand building and trying other things, experimenting.
Yeah.
And improving your value to people, because people want to work with valuable people. And if you offer more and good quality, then you're winning. But it's great to see that.
Absolutely.
I'm starting on this journey of sharing more, but it's great to see a few people that are really doing it and getting some success. Is it creating conversations on... I've seen you share some of the talks that you've done at conferences, and some comments off the book. What is the result of some of that sharing?
What's the result? I think it's multifaceted. So at the very least, it sparks conversations in the comments of the posts. What fascinates me a lot is that I get tons of contact requests after I posted something which reached a bit more audience. Like people like really have the urge to connect, which is super interesting to me. It's super un-German, I would say. So as a German, you would like, I only start to follow people after I saw something, but all the international people seem to really connect right away. And it's like, whoa, okay, interesting. And most of the people I accept, because obviously they have an urge to like get more stuff like that. So this is kind of a validation. So it sparks conversations in the comments. It sometimes leads people towards like, don't know, my newsletter or something like that, to connect on more levels. Maybe they go to conferences, they saw me speaking and said like, let's meet there, which is super cool. And it might also lead to like, invites or conversations about talking at different conferences, or simply like people saying, hey, can I pick your brain about this problem I have? Do we all want to hop on a call? And of course, you have to be careful with like saying yes to these opportunities, but it caters so much to this purpose I'm pursuing of like helping people to build better teams and products. And it's like, if that helps me to do that, that's cool. And of course, I use it also partially for like research of like, okay, I have a thesis about something. I'm going to put it out there. What do people think of it? Does it resonate with people, or I'm on a completely wrong path? So I also use it to test lots of materials and thoughts for talks or posts.
Oh yeah. Awesome. And yeah. That was kind of a personal question from me, because it's something that I'm looking at. And when I see some people that are sharing what they know for free without any barriers, I'm interested in that. And yeah. I think other people are too.
Yeah.
So, Tim, look, lateral leadership.
Yeah.
Where did this come from? Did you start working with a few agile teams or start working on a product and think, hang about, there's something amiss here. There's there's a problem that needs to be solved in the way that we conduct our work,
yeah,
or the way we approach a problem. Yeah. Where did lateral leadership come from for you?
Yeah, so I had this really like this aha moment was like when I was about like 4 years into my career as a product manager. I worked at Xing, which is pretty much the German LinkedIn equivalent. It's a pretty mature product organization. And there, pretty much right after I started there, I had the chance to attend a lateral leadership training. And it was more like, here, we have this slot, go there. So, okay, cool. And then there was this from more traditional HR company, and they did this training, and he described the challenges of lateral leadership. And I was like, great, my problem has a name.
Yeah.
Right. So it really resonates. It's like, wow, okay, yeah, this is what you're talking about. This is it. Nice. And so I found myself, okay, I now have a name for what my main challenge is. And I worked through this training, and it was a great training, but it came from a traditional coaching HR perspective, and it wasn't taught by a product practitioner, right? So it was like good on a psychological level on how people behave and stuff like that, and leadership models, I got that, but it wasn't really that connected to practice. And so, this was my first spark for that. And then I carried this idea with me for quite a while. Then I had the brief stint where I worked at a smaller consulting firm where you really experience lateral leadership on its purest level, because you come into a company, you're not like, you can't tell anyone what to do. You have to convince them to do it and to follow you on a certain project. So this was for me a phase where it really sparked again my interest in this topic and to share it with more people, because I recognized also by working with so many different industries and teams that so few people are aware of this situation, right? They were not aware of the situation that they work with people on eye level, and that there are tools and methods to help them get what they want, even though they were not the bosses of these people. And so then, and then that was combined with the topic of a moment where I felt like I had the urge to like go deeper again into a topic, like to immerse myself in that. And then that collided with the announcement from Jeff Gotthelf to found the Sense and Respond publisher, and they were looking for book submissions. I was like, okay, let's try this. And it resonated.
There's the opportunity, yeah.
Yeah, it resonated with them. And then, I mean, the original plan was, of course, to like finish it within 3 months. So like 1 year later, I was finally able to order it on Amazon. So it took obviously way longer than expected. But I also did write the book to learn like more about myself, like how it is to like go deep into it, really deep into a topic, and to have to go deep, and you can't like go through it. You have to really be like, yeah, understand it deeply.
Yeah. And the book itself, I mean, I'm counting 64 pages or so.
Yeah.
It's a really handy thing to pick yeah. up and while away for a yeah. few hours. And and really what I got from what you were sharing and talking about was the thing that comes up when you've got a team or teams that are working in an agile fashion. They're self-organizing from the Agile Manifesto and they're focused on the problem, but you need a point at which those teams are meeting the wider objectives and not having a bottleneck. And you have to question how we're going to form a set of process and principles and learnings from saying, this is what we want to achieve, and having people follow you in that way.
So what I strongly believe in is that most companies over time will, like, they will at least reduce like the amount of middle managers, and it will, most companies will consist of self-organized, loosely connected teams. And so these teams might be able to like apply agile or whatever way of working. But they, if they don't rethink how, like, which impact the self-organization not only has on the way they build products, but only on, but also on the way they have to work with each other on a personal level, they will get lost. Because if you only were waiting for command and control instructions from above, like, it doesn't work in this scenario. So I think that lateral leadership is something which can help you, like, bridge like something like an emotional gap towards true self-organization.
Yeah, I see a split in how some companies are made up. Some are, they've either done it or they're on the path of removing a layer of management.
Yeah.
And they need less people within the chain to readily and quickly make actions and work in a more efficient way, and don't need so many meetings to get there. And then there are other teams that have gone through this.
Yeah.
And I know certainly at companies like Airbnb, where they're arranged in small teams around the customer, and leadership isn't a bottleneck.
Yeah.
And the ideas to meet, they have three or so objectives over so many years. The teams are self-organized, but they tell the leadership how their projects are going to link to those main objectives.
Yeah.
And then leadership just ask questions, make sure they're on the right path, and reevaluate.
Maybe so, even helps you spare the idea and refine it, right? As a, from a coaching perspective.
Where do you think companies are at the moment? I mean, do you have a lot of connections with people in Germany and how they are made up?
Mm.
Are they on this journey, or are they not even aware that they need to make these changes?
I think the main challenge is that in order to arrive at the recognition that you need to, you need a stronger and shared definition of how important lateral leadership is, you first have to go through a certain transition towards working in an agile way in general, right? And this is the bigger bottleneck in Germany. So currently, I don't know how it is in the UK, but certainly in 2019, agile seems to become the corporate buzzword again in Germany. And so the question is whether any actions will follow. But I think as long as companies don't have adopted a certain maturity of what it means to work agile on the process side of things, they won't recognize the need for thinking about this different way of leading each other. And so, for example, in the summer, I attended a bar camp at a big fashion retailer in Germany, Otto, the Otto Group. And they're still in the midst of a big agile transition, but still lateral leadership was already present in these parts of the company who operated in an agile way, because they were faced with these challenges and questions. How do we lead each other? How to escalate? How to handle conflict? And then it was super impressive to see that on a Friday afternoon, 120 people voluntarily showed up to debate lateral leadership in a bar camp style. So it really showed like it, as soon as people have arrived at a certain maturity level, they almost, at least the operational part of the company, automatically starts to answer these questions, and then they arrive at the conclusion, oh, it's lateral leadership, it's the answer, or it's like it frames the challenge. So I think certainly Germany has a way to go to make it a common theme, I would say.
Yeah. And do you find that some people are saying, yeah, agile, good, we're doing agile, but when you kind of lift the lid, they're not actually, it's not agile as we know it?
I mean, absolutely. I think most companies would agree that they name their processes agile, and they turn like they change the job title from a project manager to a product owner, but they still do like waterfall style projects. So this is certainly an aspect of that. I absolutely would say that. I think the more interesting question here is how many companies will manage to go through this transition, and also, how long does it take to until the current C-level people on most companies, which are getting most of the energy from being in command and control, arrive at a point where they feel like, okay, I'm like, my job has changed. I'm more like a facilitator on the sideline. So I recently read a great quote in German magazine on your work, which said the pyramid becomes scared, and like the top of the pyramid becomes scared because like everyone below them wants to organize themselves in their own way. And what happens now to the pharaohs, so to say, in the top of the pyramid? What does it mean for them? And I think if like as long as sea level can't let go of this notion of what leadership used to be in the past, the operational part of the company will have a harder time getting the freedom to organize themselves on their own.
Yeah, and I think leadership as a notion or a definition is one that can be fiercely debated. Yeah. In terms of lateral leadership, there's this intersection, and you describe it in the book, between alignment and empathy. How does that come through in real life within teams?
So I think that that because the typical old school management tools don't work for leading people in this lateral environment, you have to look at a different aspect of, which aspects matter most to people. And I think the aspects which matter most to most people is either, on the one hand, having the autonomy to simply do their job. And in order to get autonomy, you need to align within your team and within the hierarchies and through hierarchies. So this is why alignment is important, to enable the autonomy you seek. On the other hand, everybody has struggles and challenges beyond the user story and the sprint planning, meaning what's your purpose, whether it's organizational flexibility, certain ethical values, or just something you pursue in the long run. And you need to address these as well, because people don't just struggle every 2 weeks during a retrospective, or they don't struggle every once per quarter when the roadmap is planned. They struggle every day. And you as the lateral leader are in this unique position to be so close to these people that you are much more capable of recognizing these struggles, and within the self-organized team come up with individual scenarios and framework to address these individual struggles, because HR and the people managers won't automatically adjust the job description and the content of everyone's job just because of some individual struggles.
No, and a job description gets you in the door, but over time you actually tell the business what your value and your impact is going to be. Yeah. So, I mean, product managers who want to kind of have this alignment and empathy and bring the team along with them to do that, what can be those challenges? I mean, you already mentioned the top C-suite saying, whoa, they're deciding what to do. Yeah. That's not what we thought this company was all about.
Yeah.
What other troubles can you see where people are starting to push against and adjust how they go through their work in this style?
Yeah, I think you have two main challenges. The one is that you will always have people. So just because you say a team is self-organized doesn't mean that everybody loves to work self-organized. So you will always have a set of people which say, I want my clear directions from top down so I know what to do and I can just check a box off that my work is complete. And I think you need to be honest that in most companies, you will always have these people. And these people will, up to a certain degree, are just not capable of working in a self-organized environment. I think that's important to recognize, that you can help them, show them this world and where their place in this world could be. But for some people, it doesn't work out. They don't want to work self-organized. So this is the one challenge, that you will have these people which say, I want top-down directions, not from a 20-year-old graduate sitting next to me having the PM title go away. I want it from my 20-year-older boss who's longer in the job, who has the higher salary and the higher job title. I want my directions from this person only. The one thing. And then the other challenge is, on the lateral sort of way, is what I said, that I think it used to be the case that many domain experts have a hard time accepting any kind of directions from someone being not a domain expert, especially if you have more factors coming into the game, like age. If you're, for example, a young product manager and working with more senior developers, this is super hard. And unfortunately, I mean, this shouldn't come to as a surprise, but I heard from some people talking about that, is that it's especially for women. So imagine you're a young woman coming into a team of older senior male engineers. This is like probably the worst scenario in terms of factors being combined, causing a sense of like, I'm not, I'm not accepting your orders, even though you're not ordering them.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, I see that come through as well. I also like, you mentioned radical candor within the book, because that's something that's been a book that's played a quite a large role in how I go about working with other people and how I feed back to them.
Yeah.
And do you think that some of those learnings, just being honest, if something's not working, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
If you don't want to work with that person, let's talk about it. What you said was quite interesting to me personally, because throughout my life, I've found that I've done my best work and I've connected most with what the work is when I've been as close to leadership as possible. And I find that at Etch right now, I can talk to the managing director, I can talk to the heads of department, and it feels that you're not going through a third person. You are getting the truth and nothing but the truth. Yeah. And that gives me enjoyment, but purpose. And being honest is so important. And I think some people just need to acknowledge that, because companies are now a bit more transparent, they're getting rid of some of the layers in their organization. They're coming closer together, that you just can't lie your way through work anymore.
Absolutely. I think for me, the most interesting aspect of, like, when I start, sometimes I mention in one talk recently, I only mentioned this radical candor book on the sideline. And then people were like, okay, what's this book about? I mean, I know how to give feedback, right? You do it this way. First, you say something nice, then you say the bad thing, then you say something nice. This is like, I'm like, this is what's called the shit sandwich. And this is only, it's like, I mean, I don't know where I got this term from, but it's really, it is a thing, like, to call it this way. And it has been, for most people, apparently it has been the best way to give feedback for quite a while. And it was like, the problem is that you think you have to put something nice first is because you're communicating the bad thing terribly, right? If you're just like if you're communicating straight and honest and nice with this person about something they should improve, you don't have to put anything nice before that. You shouldn't have to. And this is so interesting what most people think, like, okay, so I just say the thing in a proper, appropriate way. It's like, yeah, right.
Yeah. And it's such a simple piece of advice. Yeah. Following up, you do actually have to say exactly what you think in a way that you're not sandwiching it between, oh, you're doing great, but actually, no, you're not.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know how it was for you, but when I read the book, I mean, the four quarters Kim Scott describes, I immediately had like 3 to 4 people from my environment I could automatically put in every quarter, in every quadrant. It was like, okay, this person is this, this person is there, this person is there, I'm here. So it's like super... It's one of the best books on like collaboration, the feedback aspect of collaboration.
Definitely. One kind of last part of what I learned from the book, and it's so true as I see it, is the bit where you talk about Gary Hamel, and he's an American management expert, and he summarizes the imbalance between business and management. And in that, and I'm quoting here, right now your company has 21st century internet-enabled business processes, mid-century management processes, all built atop 19th century management principles. I love this quote. It is something that I see everywhere. I see companies that have worked how they've always worked, and learned from line managers, learned from leadership, and now they have the internet in recent years, but they're still trying to work out what to do with it. And I love that you included this quote. What did you get out of what Gary talks about here?
I mean, it really struck a chord. And to be honest, I found this quote quite late in the process of writing the book. And it just like, it seemed like a missing puzzle piece to describe like the situation you're in, right? So much of our daily work has developed in a great way over the past years, working agile, talking to users, all that stuff. But like the underlying principle of how we communicate and collaborate with each other seems, especially for hierarchical managers, because as a hierarchical manager, you can always rely on your safety net, which is like the authority you have been given from your job description. And if we rely on that, this is your safety net. You always fall into this one. If everything fails, you can always say, I'm the boss, we do it this way. And if this doesn't help, you scream, right? So, and this is still the thing. But as a lateral leader, you don't have the safety net. And this is why it feels so uncomfortable for most people to step into a leadership position without having the safety net. But if we do it, like if you apply different methods of leading, you don't need the safety net of falling back on your hierarchical title and your job description.
Yeah. I've never, like you, seen what I've experienced in a quote like that in such a very clear way. Yeah. And just reading that as I went through was awesome.
Yeah.
So what's next for you, Tim? I mean, you've done the book. You're working on a product and leading that at the moment. I assume you're applying some of those principles in the product there. What's the rest of this year looking like? And we talked about you sharing more content.
Yeah.
I assume you're going to do more talks. What's up?
Yeah, so I have at least for the first half of 2019, I have some stuff coming up. So next month, I will be at the Lean Startup Summit in Berlin, and I will facilitate a roundtable on lateral leadership, which is pretty exciting. I will also do a workshop on the topic the day before in Berlin. So it's a two-day package. And then it gets a bit busier in April. Early April, I will be at the Jam Product Leaders Retreat, which is a new format from the folks making the Jam conference in London. So it's in the nature in Cardiff, like super in a cottage style thing. It's super interesting. It's like, I hope Brexit hasn't messed up anything until then. Let's see how that goes. So I will be there, which is super great. I will talk about OKR and product management, but also about lateral leadership. So it's a two-sided conversation. And then I will be in late April again in Ireland then, end of April in Dublin for Agile Lean Ireland. And there might be something coming up in June abroad. Also related to lateral leadership. And then let's see what the rest of 2019 holds up.
That sounds like a pretty full calendar. So if I was a product manager right now and I've read lateral leadership, I've been to one of your talks, what can they do when they go back to the business and they say, hey, I've got all this knowledge now, I want to execute it, and they have permission to do so? What support is out there? So I know some people that are likely sometimes not engaged, they'll say, where's the playbook? I'll look at that, but actually over time they forget to look at it and keep and check and put it up on the shelf. How can people keep momentum of being lateral leaders?
I think the most easy thing to do is the empathy part, because you don't, like, I mean, you can apply certain frameworks to generating empathy in the team, but you can do that through super simple actions of like simply telling the engineers on your team, hey, look, can I come to your next engineering job fix or something like that? I want to be a silent observer. I want to hear about your pains firsthand so I have context for your actions in the work when we at the intersection of our work. So I think like just moving closer to the challenges of the domain experts you're working with is a great first way to do that. I'm convinced that through that, you will create multiple aha moments very early on, which will stay in your head and will come up when you are in difficult conversations or you feel annoyed again because everything's delayed because engineering takes so long. I'm making quotes here. Like you're like, okay, no, I know about this. I know this is real and I want to practice. I want to demonstrate empathy that I feel you and appreciate what you're doing despite all of that. I think this is the most easy thing to say. And the other one is to start building up on the whole topic of autonomy, genuinely trying to deconstruct the motivators of your boss and also your team members of like, what's their agenda? Like, what do they think?
Oh, yeah.
And why are they behaving the way they're doing?
Totally, man. Yeah, like finding out everyone's KPI or everyone's purpose.
Yeah.
Sometimes in client services, we help make the leader within the client look amazing within the business or something.
Yeah.
If you tick everyone's needs off, then you're going to start making some really massive changes.
Yeah, and especially understanding the systems behind it, because most likely your boss is not an asshole, but the system he or she has to work in makes him or her behave like an asshole. And I think this is what's important to understand.
Totally. And they need to awake to questioning why, and just, you don't have to put up with this. You can actually question why, and you can actually do something about it.
Yeah.
Tim, it's been amazing to talk to you.
Likewise.
I'll spend more time talking to you. I need to get myself to Germany at some point.
Yeah. Let's see if what holds the travel schedule ready for me. Maybe we manage to meet up.
Yeah,
I have to
travel
through London to get to the jam retreat. So let's see, maybe.
Fantastic. Yeah, I can feed you some breakfast or something. Tim, awesome. Where can people find you? Where's your favorite channel at the moment?
So at the moment, it's definitely LinkedIn, but it's hard to say. This is my LinkedIn username, so just go on LinkedIn and type in Tim Herwig. Other than that, you can find me on pretty much every other social network at Herwig T, like my last name combined with the first capital of my first name, and we take it from there.
Awesome. And you have a newsletter, don't you?
Yeah, it's there. Like, if you go to my website, herwigt.com, it's like the very first thing I put in your face. So you can't miss it, but not in an intrusive manner. It's like I'm suggesting
it. You cannot miss it.
So yeah, this is a good way to connect, and I'm looking forward to any conversations.
Great. Tim, thank you so much.
Cool.
And to anyone else, do pick it up. It is the tiniest book you'll ever read, but when you do go through it, I think certainly product managers will start questioning why and start alleviating some of the problems that they might be experiencing getting stuff done. Thank you, Tim.
Thanks for having me, Ross. It was a pleasure.
Cheers, buddy.
Bye.
So that was the interview with Tim, and I really enjoyed talking to him. I wanted to talk with him much longer, but I'm trying to keep these podcasts down to a sizable chunk. So Lateral Leadership is out. It's I think I picked it up on Amazon, and it is a great, 64 pages or so, very useful for designers who need to understand where product managers are and some of their roles and responsibilities, and to dare I say empathize with some of the challenges that they deal with organizing teams. But also for product managers themselves, I think that when you are trying to work out how to assess your current state of leadership, how to get alignment, making sure people are following your vision, even so far as understanding how to recognize and address interpersonal struggles, It's really a book how to deal with people and how to help them do their best work and help them understand their objectives. And I love that he included Kim Scott's book, Radical Candor. It's another book that I'd recommend. But the key bit for me is that quote from Gary Hamel. And I'm going to say it again because I absolutely love it. So he said, right now your company has 21st century internet-enabled business processes, mid-20th century management processes, all built atop 19th century management principles. It is the embodiment of what I experience and see in some of the teams that we work with within the companies that we get to provide value for. And it is so true. When companies are trying to work out what digital transformation is, I would show them this quote now, because it's not a case of, we're a business, we have a website, have we done the digital transformation bit yet? No. It is about being as useful and valuable to customers, and that's either being in their pocket, that's either being where they need you to be, and it's helping them, it's not helping you. And the balance between meeting user needs and meeting those business objectives you need to work towards, it is a balance, and it's a two-way conversation. And actually, the book Sensor Respond talks about that two-way conversation between business and user. And if anything, it needs to start at the business end. So I really enjoyed that talk. We're going to get a few more people on talking about destroying the defaults. There's some interesting growth hacking entrepreneurs that I want to speak to in the next few weeks. We're aiming for the business category, but my word, business can come from anywhere. And sometimes it needs to start somewhere. And starting is really, really hard. I mean, most companies fail when they're starting out. So hope to bring you that content. And I'd love you to review and give us feedback about what we're doing here. So we've recently put our podcast on iTunes and Spotify. It would be great to get some 5-star reviews on the iTunes store. Even if you just put 5, but a little comment just saying what you got from it would be great. It helps us get more people on here and creates a bigger feedback loop. But certainly it means that we can attract some other fine folks to learn from. And this is a learning channel. We're not doing it for anything else. We're sharing what we know, what we're learning, and there's no barriers here. Just put it in your ears and, you know, get on with what you need to do. So hope you enjoyed that. Love to hear your feedback. And we'll be back soon with another Hedge podcast. See you later.